So obviously you know the venue way better than I do. So I don't need to go to the toilets. If there's any funny noises, I'm just going to follow the rest of you in terms of fire drills or any other sort of drills you might have. Brakes we've spoken about. Health and safety awareness check. So we're not doing any physical techniques or what would be now, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, restrictive practices in terms of formally. We'll look at some personal safety pieces. How do we keep ourselves a bit safe around all of this? Pete's going to get, and I don't know if you know who it is, and it doesn't matter if you do or don't, we're going to get some people trained as trainers a bit later in the year. They will have access to a whole range of restrictive practices. Okay, so, and we'll come talk more about that as we get into that space. It's an interesting space, to say the least, particularly given the new Education Queensland guidance, particularly for special schools, as is often the case. It's how do we make sense of this working in the environment you're working in as part of this. But I'm not going to make you do any bits, all right? So that's when we go up, we're going to move around, those of us who are willing and able to sort of thing, and look at space around all of that. But you have the right to opt out, okay? I don't make you do anything. Do you have the right to opt out? So always demonstrate what I'm going to ask people to do, and then you go, yeah, I'm okay doing that, or I'm not. And that could be physically or emotionally as part of that. But nothing dramatic, I assure you. Confidentiality, you all know what's appropriate to share about the young people you support and who it's appropriate to share that with. Yeah, not everyone needs to know everything or is appropriate. But sharing some information obviously helps us all be on the same page as part of it. Sensitivity is, we all have different tolerance levels around different behaviours. And it's not a competition for who can put up with the most extreme. All right, it's knowing ourselves. Thing we teach a lot about, really deeply self-reflecting on myself, what can I do around this? What do I do when these things happen? Because at the end of the day, we can't really control anyone's behaviour. We can't even control our own behaviour, because most of that is automated. You know, if you've been working here for many years, presuming if you drove, you probably didn't forget big chunks of the drive. Your brain is designed to automate stuff, so you forget about stuff. You're distracted, but your brain is still on process, but you're not consciously thinking about it. So there's a chance to stop and reflect about, you'll have lots and lots of great practice. Yeah? Everyone in this room will have lots and lots of great practice. It'll bring it into you to reflect on, think about, as it was last year, or you might have to do it during the holidays, depends on your background, but thinking about, okay, what do I do well? And hopefully we'll add a few strategies to your toolbox. Because you'll all know what works one day, sometimes doesn't work the next day, or the next minute, with young people we're supporting as part of that. Punctuality and attendance, thanks for getting on time. After breaks, there's a big temptation just before kids come back to get lost in whatever we're setting up in our classrooms. If we can get back on time, which means we finish on time and we get everything done, so I appreciate all of that. Mobile phones, if you can turn them off, great. If you need them on, you can put them on silent, and if you need to respond, if you can just go outside of the training room, we'd appreciate that. This potentially, hopefully, is the start of a relationship rather than just a Nick comes in, delivers hopefully a useful, interesting, enjoyable professional learning never to be seen or heard of again. So we're here ongoing support, because we'll cover lots of different things as we go through today, but there may be something that pops up next week, the week after, whatever else, that you think, ooh, we didn't really cover off on that, what might we do about that? So we're always there to offer support and advice on around those things. And at the end of the day, I'll give you a point of reference where you can go on. You get access to the slides, all right? So I don't think if you miss anything or you want to write it down, you get access to that, and you get access to a range of other things as support. So introduction, given the size of the group, we could spend all morning introducing everyone to me, so we won't do that, because that's not a good use of your time. But I'll briefly say, Nick Burnett, as you can tell I'm from England, so I started as a secondary school teacher. Then, more by accident than by design, went into special education. And I went from quite a middle-class secondary school into, we have these in the UK, so I have a residential special school. So I basically had to forget everything I'd been taught and start again. And we had, you know, kids from 5 to 19. Some were day, some were weekly, some were 50 weeks a year. They lived there for a whole range of reasons. We won't get into whether that's a good or a bad thing or anything else. But I had to start. And I didn't get any training in how to really support behaviour until I was a principal later on. So I worked in a residential special school and a range of state special schools, like Rocky North, and I finished the last 4 years before I came over, would you believe it, 17 years ago this year. You won't believe it from my accent, but it's 17 years ago this year. And then we implemented team teaching in my school. And yet, look, it's not magic wand. It doesn't make those difficult, challenging behaviours go away. But what it did do was give us a shared language, a shared understanding of how we support that behaviour. And for me, what really resonated, it was a positive approach to what can be quite challenging and hazardous behaviour. You know, how do we respond in a positive way, even when that behaviour is really quite threatening to us or potentially threatening to us? So that's what it's about. When I would say team teach is a collection of good practice, all right? So it'll reinforce what you already do, hopefully add to your strategies. It was developed in a special school in the UK about 25 years ago. So its premise is from special ed. It's now delivered to about 100,000 people a year in the UK, the largest provider over there, and about 10,000 people a year in Australia. Not all by me, thankfully. But so it's widely used, and we'll share a little bit more about who does that as well. It's very much also what resonated with me, some values base. If you don't remember anything else, I hope you remember this question. What would you want someone else to do in this situation if it was your loved one? So it comes from that values base. You know, if this was my loved one, for whatever they are doing, what would I want staff to do on that occasion? And it sounds obvious we're in a calm training room, but in the moment when they're trying to really potentially harm us, themselves or other people, sometimes we can forget that frame of reference. If we've always got that uppermost in our minds, we're more likely to give a considered response. Okay, and all we can do is our best. And the challenge is we can do everything right and things can still go wrong. Alright, that's the nature of it. But at least then we know we've given it our best shot around all of that. So it's got a very much a values base. We'll talk about behaviours that challenge. Yeah, we're human beings. Yeah, there's things that press our buttons. It could be colleagues, it could be the kids, and that's okay. You can't stop that, but knowing which ones press our buttons, because then we can put in place a plan. When that happens, what am I going to do? Because our instinctive response are rarely useful or helpful, unfortunately. Yeah, instinctive response are for a different space, a different environment, not for a caring environment generally. Okay, so we'll talk more about those as we get into it as well. As I say, it's adding to your toolbox of approaches. Yeah, you all have a wide range of de-escalation skills. We'll give you a chance to talk and share those. But hopefully we'll add to that. And a lot of what you will talk about, I'm sure many of you, if not all of you, will think, well, that's common sense. But what's the problem with common sense? It's not common. All right, we've all got a slightly different interpretation of that, given our background, our experiences, how we were brought up, what happened at school, etc. Alright, so we can't just say, well, it's common sense to do this, or it's common sense to probably can say it, but it's not going to be consistent. And of course, our common sense is right, and someone else's is wrong. That's how we operate. But it isn't. We've got different experiences. Some people are naturally highly, highly skilled at de-escalating really challenging behaviour. Many of us aren't. We do okay sometimes, not so well other times. So it's upskilling everyone, so we've all got a good level of skills, a good level of knowledge, a good level of approach to this. Yeah, rather than just thinking, oh, they're great and they're not so good. How do we help everyone get a bit better and improve on our practices around all of that? And I'll share lots of my poor practice before I knew any better. Alright? I didn't know it was poor practice. I was doing my best in the absence of any training. And that's all we can do. We'll talk about the end of the day. What do we do following difficult incidents? Because, say, we can do everything right, things can still go wrong. Then if we don't build in a process, and it's a challenge, because we're time poor in school, special school environments, or any school environments, but special school environments, if we don't, the chances are we'll keep repeating the same mistakes. Yeah, so how do we learn from those difficult situations? How do the students learn to find different ways, better ways? As I say, we'll look at some very basic personal safety. How do we keep ourselves a bit safer? Because the best option is no one gets hurt. Isn't it? That's the best option. No one gets into that situation. The working reality, in my experience, is I can't guarantee you're not going to. Yeah, nature of the dynamic nature of the young people you support. On occasions, even with all this knowledge, people still get hurt on occasions, unfortunately. That doesn't mean it's okay, and we'll talk more about that. All we can do is our best again around all of that. Again, at the end of the day, short bit of time in groups, talk about issues arising. Every environment I've ever worked in and with can get better. So there's a chance to think, okay, given what we've talked about today, what things do you think, collectively as a small group, think would help make your role, your where you operate, even better? Right? And it will potentially raise quite a few questions. Hopefully it'll give you a few answers, but actually it raises lots of questions and deliberately. Alright, even around the legal side of things, unfortunately, but that we'll talk more about as we get to it. And then we review the learning as we move on. It's a little bit about why, as I say, it started in a special school environment, but now is used across a wide range of environments. Predominantly in education, that's our basis, that's our background, in the UK and in Australia and New Zealand. But we've also gone into a whole range of disability sectors. We work quite widely in the disability sector, and also more recently in the health sector. It's about de-escalation. That's the primary purpose. How do we de-escalate human behaviour? And that can be kids, it can be adults, it can be people with a disability, it can be people without a disability. All right, so it plays out and it's worked, you know, and the feedback is very positive in all of those. It's about everyone feeling a bit safer. Yeah, obviously we want to keep the kids safe, but, and this might sound a bit controversial, I don't think so, but as importantly, keeping you safe. Yeah, because if we don't feel safe, we're less likely to do the right things. Same as the kids. If they don't feel safe, we're more likely to escalate in terms of our behaviour. So how do we all feel a bit safer to reduce that anxiety? Let's say when we implemented it across the school, we had about 100 staff, did all that difficult behaviour go away? Absolutely not. Over time, fairly soon, right, not straight away, but over a period of time, because we had more consistency, the amount of incidents dropped. Say there's always, as people say, there's always likely to be, given your environment, some kids who display really quite challenging behaviour. That's the nature, unfortunately, of the environment, isn't it? But what it did was gradually lessen down the number of those incidents, the number of those events. As I say, we talk about the 95%. So at least 95% of our responses are non-physical. Yeah, and hopefully 100%. But it will depend on who you're supporting, so whether that's reasonable, that sort of number. And again, we're not getting into that today, but just so you know, in terms of restrictive practices that we teach, they're gradual and graded. Start at really, really low level, a guide, an escort, and potentially go into high level restraints. And again, there's a rationale for that. A, based on that's how we want to care for people, but B, legally. And the key word is proportionate. What's the level of risk presented by their behaviour? Then I respond in a proportionate way. Yeah, so I don't overreact, I don't underreact as part of that. Fits well, should change that. Traditionally, way back, it always used to be called positive PBS. Now, quite a few places call it PBL. I know you're starting on your journey around that, but it fits well with that. We were asked the special school, well, I was, the last 2 days. And this isn't, and people often and still get confused at times. They think, we're doing PBL, we don't need team teacher. We're doing team teacher, we don't need PBL. For me, they work really well together. So PBL is your frameworks, your policies, and how we operate. Team teacher is how we implement PBLs. Right? That's how I put it together from my perspective. This is highly practical. Once we get into it, the things we do that influences, that gives us that approach. It's a lot of schools, not all schools, and it's not appropriate that all schools do it, restorative practice approach. And again, we'll talk a bit about that, what we do following difficult incidences around that. It's that holistic approach. So it's not one approach, it's say that collection of best practice. Whole range of research and case studies that can give you access to if they're useful. Look on the website, you can go and have a look at how other people have implemented it, if possible, and that ongoing support. Yeah, because things pop up as we go through events that we hadn't thought of when we're doing the training. So, different states and territories, I'm sure you know, operate in different ways. But WA, Victoria, ACT operate as a state approach, and they all use Team Teach in their training around that. Autism Queensland, they adopt and use Team Teach in all their training. Whole range of other sectors, and obviously in the UK and New Zealand as part of that. So it just changes to PBL, Ron, because it makes more sense to you in that. So this is very briefly, a couple of slides, how it sits, all right? So we talk about that range of approaches, the primary, the secondary, and the tertiary approaches, all right? So our major focus is on the primary. Some of those will be secondary as well, kind of people, and, you know, the high end point stuff, the tertiary stuff, There are a range of responses around that. Important, we'll talk about this. I don't know anyone who loves the paperwork. All right, but it's super important we collect that. And we'll talk more about how do we make that reasonable. How do we collect the important information? Because if we don't collect any data around what we're doing, we don't really know if we're getting better or worse. Yeah, that's the challenge. And on our good days, you know, if we don't notice as much, or we can cope with more of those challenging behaviours, when we're a bit down or a bit tired, we don't. Because we're human beings. We're never always the same as the young people we support are. So the data is really important. We'll talk more about that. Yeah, we'll talk again also about a couple of frameworks and tools that may be useful to help you try and unpack what's the function on some of these behaviours. Some are obvious, some are highly complex. And this probably won't give you the answer, but it might give you some clues. Because that gives us a chance then to think of what replacement behaviours might still get, you know, the young person might still get what they want out of their behaviour then, but in a more acceptable way. Some young people, I don't think it's lots, but some young people go into crisis so they get restrained, because that's how they get deep pressure. Yeah? Most don't, but some do. They think, how do I get my deep pressure? Because that's what I need, that's what I do. I attack someone, and people will hold me and I get deep pressure. Yeah? I'm not saying all of them. No way does everyone do that, but some might, all right, in your environment. It's good to question, why are they doing what they're doing? What are they getting out of it? And how do we give them alternative ways, you know, for everyone? Overall aim, so we sit under an external accrediting framework. The most relevant one here is the Institute of Conflict Management. So everything we do goes through a 3-year review, an external review, legally and medically, to make sure we're on track with that. So it's not just our best hopes around this that is right. We have external experts in that space that check all of that. Adding to your positive behaviour support approaches, that emphasis on de-escalation, so we're reducing risk, reducing restraint, and reducing restrictive practices. I'm not expecting you to read that. All right, these are our values as a company, about being respectful, so hopefully all my interactions with you, and hopefully they are with each other, are respectful. Yeah, accepting of difference. You know, we should be great at that in special school, shouldn't we? Really, because there's lots of difference. But as adults, we generally do that well with kids, but sometimes we're not as great with each other about accepting difference. So respectful of our different views, our different approaches, and talking those through. That ongoing support, so you can do your very important and at times difficult job a bit better. Highly practical and accessible. All right. So this isn't about what level of education we do or don't have. People of all different creeds and cultures have accessed this to make it highly accessible, and hopefully leave with some really practical things to implement if you need to going forward. And that ongoing support and refresher. So I was back in Aston Special School, because I've been there 2 years ago, just to go back and refresh people. Train new people, refresh those who've done it before. Just because our brain is designed to make our life as easy as possible, and that's great in many ways, but sometimes it takes us down into habits that aren't the best. Alright, so a quick reminder, am I doing things now that are not as helpful as they could be in these situations? So for us, it's those values. The attitude, skill and knowledge to implement team teach. So team teach everything we do. You know, historically, well not historically, still to some extent, people think about team teach as the techniques. Alright, I'm trying to shift people. Team teach is how we operate. This is what we do. You know, how that shared approach to supporting behaviour is part of that. And what we do following those difficult incidents is part of it. So restrictive practices is, for want of a better phrase, a hot topic. Okay, it's across Australia, well, across the world, but across Australia. Many states and territories are still, you know, struggling with how do we do this better. Yeah, so there's less of it. We say something now that's potentially controversial. I'm okay to be controversial on the times. So often the drive is to eliminate restrictive practices. So do I think we'll ever eliminate restrictive practices? No. I don't think that's the right goal, personally. You know, I got in a taxi, I used a restrictive practice to keep myself safe. Questioning our use of restrictive practices, what's the purpose of it? Can we use less of it? You know, why are we using it? Should it be about safety? That's what it's about. Absolutely, we can minimise it. Look, do we really need the number of restrictive practices we're currently doing? Always good to question that. Personally, think the goal of eliminating it is not the right goal, because that might mean some of your young people can't go out into the community, because we need to implement some restrictive practices to give them access to some of those things. Okay, and we'll talk through that a bit more. I'm not saying I'm right. That's a personal view. Just want to let you that sit with you around all of that. And knowing what is reasonable, and the best way to do that is not just it to be you. Have conversations with colleagues and agree what is reasonable. Otherwise, all the responsibility sits with you. And it's better if we share that responsibility as much as possible. Because we all have our own perspective on it, but generally very value-based. I'm not saying that's wrong or right, but that shared approach around this is better. You all know, the better the teamwork in our classrooms, in our schools, the better the communication is, the more effective things are. The nicer the environment is, the more we can cope with, because we're in those supportive spaces. So how do we do that better? One of the things we'll talk about is how do we offer help? How do we receive help? How do we tag team? You know, when things are going well, that's easy, but when it's a tricky event, the young person's pressed our buttons and made us annoyed or frustrated, how does someone say, "Ooh, Nick, how about you leave and I this person?" And I don't take it personally. And we'll talk more about how we might do that. How do we know what's okay? If we don't feel secure on what is okay, if we're not clear on what the boundaries are, how do we help the young people? I would say their job is to push against the boundaries. Where's that boundary? And some of their behaviours are trying to find out, because they want us to help them feel safe. And if there's no boundary there, it actually feels a bit unsafe to keep going. But have an agreed understanding of where those boundaries are. And I talk about rubber boundaries. All right. So some days, because of what they've just experienced, you know, the cat's died or dad's left or whatever else, we have to understand that's probably going to impact their behaviour a bit more than we would normally say is okay. Yeah, it doesn't mean we accept getting hurt, but those are rubber boundaries that special schools generally are very good at. Sometimes mainstream aren't quite as good at. So I just want to get rid of them as soon as they do something that's out. Not our problem. Special schools are generally good at that. Yeah, this is a safety layer for school, but also for Education Queensland. There's an expectation they provide relevant training and support for what the risks that people face. And so this helps with all of that, and we'll talk more about that. And again, do we have everything that we can to equip you for doing a difficult job on occasions? Yeah, that's the expectation around all of this. We'll talk more about these when we get to the legal side of things. All right, so most of these and many of these are around legal aspects, what we can do, what we can't do. I'll focus in on that. We're always looking to reduce risk and strengthen restriction. So what do we do that does that? This one. All right, so what we're looking always to do is how do we reduce risk and also reduce restraint and restriction as part of this. If there's an obvious course of action that there is at zero risk, we take it, we do it. But in many situations, there's not an obvious one. That's got some risk, that's got some risk. Doing something, not doing something, they both have some risk. So which do we think has the less risk? And it's tricky in the moment, that's hard, isn't it? But we'll talk about that. So it's that balance of doing something or not doing something, stepping out of that and talking through those balance of risks. Core value statements. So team teach fundamentals. How do we improve our understanding of why people do what they do? And then how do we improve our responses to that behaviour? All right, so we're trying to increase our understanding, but also increase our range of responses we can when people exhibit those behaviours as part of it. Yeah, if we understand what the function of the behaviour is, we've got a better chance of teaching them alternative ways. You know, we're very good in special schools at breaking down the curriculum into, you know, finite sort of steps, or, you know, really, really small steps, but sometimes around behaviour we just want it to stop. Understand why, but it's not as simple as that, of course. It's like to teach better behaviours, alternative behaviours. So the chance of eliminating a behaviour is virtually nil. As humans, we need to find replacement behaviours. And that, when it's things like self-harm and things like that, it's super tricky, isn't it? It's complex. Yeah? So it's thinking about, okay, we don't want them to do that, whatever reason it is, or what alternatives can we help them learn? So we're teaching them better ways around their behaviour. It's just about control, and in a crisis situation, in that moment, it might be to reduce risk and help people feel safer. But that's a short-term strategy, because then they always need external people to do that. Our emphasis is of our aim is, and it's a, you know, it's a long-term plan, isn't it, for some of the young people you support, is how do they self-control, so they don't need us to provide those, you know, supports in place as part of it. If we need to use any interventions as part of this, care, control and support should feel safe, it should feel calming. If it doesn't, then generally people get worse or keep going. So how do we do things that help people feel calm and in control? Not expecting you to walk around in pairs, all right? Some environments, and some people, they do need to. Most of us don't. But how do we get, if we know, I refer to the very difficult young person as Johnny, so apologies if any of you are Johnny or the loved ones Johnny, I'm not referring to them. If I'm supporting Johnny and I know when he starts to escalate, how do I get a second or a third or a fourth person here as quickly as possible? And have a plan as to how we do that. And that will vary depending on the level of risk presented. Generally, whenever we're doing what we're doing, we're communicating with the young person. But for some young people, actually communicating to them when they're in crisis just keeps them going. So again, we put it in a plan. For Johnny, we don't speak to him when he's at stage 3, because that makes sense a bit later, because it keeps him cross and angry. Right? Generally we do, we let them know, it's okay, we're going to take you somewhere safe, we're going to do positive statements about what's going to happen. And we're having to do something, so there's emergency responses, never happened before, we do our best. That's all we can do. That's never happened before, new kids you might get in. You do your best, don't you, as we're working out, if you haven't got all the information or something different plays out, we do our best. Once it's happened, once it's a foreseeable risk, then there's an expectation, put plans in place. How might we eliminate this risk? How, if we can't do that, what can we do to reduce it? What do we do if it does happen? So we've got a plan. It's really hard to think of the right things to do in the moment, because we're in stress mode, we're in, you know, in that really difficult understanding space as well. It's really hard to think when we're under stress. So that's where the plans are really helpful and important. I say the best option is the young people, self-control, isn't it? But you all know many of your young people are on a real, potentially long journey to get to that point. So all we can do is chip away at that. How are we helping them get a bit better at that, a bit better at that? But that positive environment really helps. You know what's okay and what's not okay. So we can be safe and secure in our responses to the young people around all of that. Risk assessment. So I'll talk through the day a bit more about risk assessment, what we call a dynamic risk assessment. So a dynamic risk assessment is what good staff have always done, stop and think before I act. So we have formal, foreseeable risk assessments, where we know activities or environments, etc. In the moment, something happens, I stop and think before I act. Sounds obvious, but in the go-to instinct, we're not in a great space around all of that. And again, a legal term will come back to best interest. Are we acting in the best interest of that young person? So we'll unpack that a bit further. Again, it sounds an obvious one, but in certain circumstances, it's a bit greyer around all of that. What do the policies and the paperwork and the PBL, in my view, helps with that first one? All right, puts those other things in place at a school level, a system level. We see challenging behaviour is often the result in a breakdown in communication. Signalling, they need some support. Yeah, we need to help teach them better ways to signal that, but that's where they're at this precise moment. Okay, at the end of the day, we've got to make our own judgment. But that's where hopefully the policies and the plans, etc., help us operate within an agreed framework. Otherwise, it sits with us to justify that. Now, there may be occasions where we still need to make our own judgment call on that. Yeah, that's the nature of the dynamic environment. But they should be hopefully less and less. If we get everything else right, the number of times we have to make an individual call should get less and less. Yeah, and again, restrictive practice is about assessment of risk. How do we reduce the risk? What's the level of risk presented by that? Talked about the team approach, as I say, better higher functioning teams, we're more effective, aren't we? The more we can deal with, even when we have tricky days, because we support each other. We're more on the same page around all of that. As I say, we'll talk more about this later, what we call the health protocol. When I started teaching many years ago now, it was often a weakness. You can't control, I use that word deliberately, control the kids in your class, then you're not a good teacher. Yeah, now some people are very good at that, some people struggle at that, but you don't just say, oh well, they're not good. How do we help everyone get a bit better around this, rather than just saying you're either good at it or you're not? You know, because we can all improve our practices. Many young people I've worked with quite enjoy the build-up to crisis. They're quite enjoyable. Lots of attention, lots of noise, lots of things happening. But I don't know any that enjoy being out of control. And sometimes they set themselves off on this path and they don't know how to de-escalate. So that's where they need us to help them calm down, be in control. As I say, I said it early on and I'll say it more than once, no apologies for that. What would I want somebody to do in similar circumstances if this was my loved one? Yeah, and that's a great frame of reference, a great thing to think about. Ultimately, team teaches around that. Self-restraint. Yeah? Am I doing everything I can do to influence a better outcome? If I think it's going to go really, really well with this young person today, better chance it will. If I think it's going to go really, really badly with this young person today, better chance it will. It's not as simple as that, we know that. But how we are and how we do influences people around us, including young people. And that's all we can do. We can influence them and how we respond. Fundamentally, it's about improved relationships, improved communication. How do I redirect this young person as opposed to show rejection to them? Yeah, redirect them. How do I teach them a better way as opposed to just control? Because that's short-term control is. As I say, in the moment, on occasions, with a relatively small number of people, we might need to do that. That's not a long-term strategy. As I say, foreseeable risk, we've talked numerous times about that. Happened, emergency response, never happened before, we do our best. Happened once, it's now a foreseeable risk. There's expectations on us individually and organisationally to do something about that. And we'll come back to that. In its summary, and we're not really going to go into the biomechanics, I'll share one little bit to help you keep a bit safer. But team teach is understanding how people think, what influences behaviour, better knowledge around that, so we can influence people to do more helpful, useful things for themselves. And then if we really need to, understanding how the body operates, so we need to use, if we have to, we use less force around all of that.